Morningstar, 853.M30, the 55th year of the Great Crusade. Category 8, disaster. Large scale and duration, localized populated area. Chapter 1. Zarukin, Master of the Suns, Lord of Iron. The dust swirled like a miniature vortex in Athava's palm, its composite elements spun by the whims of the planet's increasingly chaotic magnetic fields. It was reckless to remain in Zarukin's ruins in the face of the oncoming magna storm, but the Thousand Suns did not lightly abandon knowledge won by lost generations. An ashen wind howled through the broken structures and collapsed ruins, as if in lament for the city's lost glories. It must once have been magnificent, the scale and plan of the remaining stumps of pitted marble, suggestive of enormous constructions of polished stone and shimmering glass. Zarukin spread from the rugged haunches of the mountains, following the unnaturally straight groove of a wide river valley. 1,000 years or more had passed since the city had been inhabited, and nature had reclaimed many of its ancient plascrete canyons and shattered thoroughfares. The architecture was pre-Old Knight, bespoke and without the modularity that would later typify the aesthetic of humanity's ultra-rapid expansion to the stars. Morningstar had been settled early in the golden age of exploration, and Zarukin was one of its earliest cities.
"Was this where Morningstar's first king raised his capital?" Athava asked, as the dust danced in his hand. "Why did your world alone stand untouched by the madness, but this city fall? Did your hubris bring you down, your greed? Or was it simply your time? Would that I could talk to you. What might you teach me?"
Athava knew he was being overly sentimental, but the thought of knowledge being forgotten was as painful to him as a gunshot. He eased his mind into an elevated plane of thought, something the Legion's newly established cults, the Fellowships, were calling enumerations. He'd read variants of the technique in the few ancient Archimenean texts that had survived Cardinal Tang's purge of the Shi Wu Library, but only since leaving Prospero had he begun to perfect the technique. The enumerations allowed him to focus perfectly on the task at hand, to better construct the mental architecture required to face any given situation. Athava studied the play of particles in his palm, watching them spin in ever more complex iterations. Iron oxide particles glittered, the remnants of something ancient and metallic, long since gone to dust amid the ruined city. He sought meaning in the patterns, echoes of the future woven within the random interactions of the dust's gyrations. Future scrying had always been his focus, but sifting meaning from the great ocean's depths had always been challenging. He glanced from the dancing red dust to the curvature of his left shoulder guard. Emblazoned in pale ivory upon crimson was the serpentine star icon of the Thousand Suns Legion. Within it was the staring eye of his new fellowship, Athenian. The name felt new to him, yet spoke of ancient learnings, of a time when wizened academics pored over many quaint and curious volumes of forgotten lore. Athava was well aware of the mystical significance of names, and this one held a power all its own. The cult's teachings, and those of the Corvidae, the Pavoni, and the rest, granted him power he had never dreamed possible. They had allowed him to achieve things all but unknown in the days before Prospero, before the Legion's rebirth. He eased the barriers within his mind, allowing the great ocean to seep into his flesh. It flowed into his body like water, pouring along a complex series of aqueducts, directed and shaped by the mental thought forms of the third enumeration. He thrilled to the sense of the unknown becoming known, of the unseen and unwritten possibilities now being revealed. A tantalizing image formed in his mind, a fleeting glimpse of a dreaming city at the top of the world, its spires molten as the world burned around it. Was this Zarukin's doom?
What are you doing?
Asked a muffled voice behind him, and the moment was gone. The flames fell away from his sight, and he quelled the build-up of power within him, sighing as the mundane reality of the world reasserted itself. Thinking, he said, opening the fingers of his gauntlet and letting the winds howling through the city blow the dust away. Athava wiped the last of it from his palm and turned as he rose to his full height in the centre of the windswept thoroughfare. The crimson of his bulky warplate reflected the tortured light of the sky, making it shimmer as if with a veneer of oil. An elegantly proportioned woman with charcoal-black skin stood before him, tightly wrapped in a brightly coloured robe of interlocking geometric patterns. He'd assumed her attire was ceremonial when they'd first met, but he had since learned it was culturally significant, indicating scholarly status within the peoples of the equatorial regions. Behind her, a Legion Stormbird and two Cervantes-class transporters sat sheltered from the oncoming storm in the lee of a debris cliff. Their engines thrummed with noise and power, spooling up in readiness for launch.
Conservator Ashkali, he said. What can I do for you?
Nico, she said. I think we've explored these old ruins long enough to dispense with formalities, don't you?
As you say, he replied, both of them knowing he would never refer to her by her first name.
Nico Ashkali was Morningstar's senior conservator, a Terran by birth, but a native at heart. She led the excavations in and around the ruins of Zarukin, and she had proven to be a thorough and perceptive academic. Her steel-grey hair was bound up in a patterned headscarf, and the glare goggles of a rebreather obscured her features. She pulled up her goggles, revealing startlingly green eyes set in deeply lined sockets. She shielded her gaze from the billowing dust and pointed to the sky.
"We have to evacuate the dig site," she said,
her voice muted by the dust filter covering her mouth.
"Meteorologicus says the magna storm is at least an hour out, which probably means it'll hit us in 10 minutes.
Athava lifted his gaze to the mountains in the east. The flaring detonations of a colossal magnetic storm marched over their summits. It was impossible to tell which way the planet's unpredictable weather systems would hurl them.
"The storm front is moving down to sweep across the plains," he said. "It will likely pass, Zarukin."
"Or it could just as easily change course," replied Ashkali. "If it hits us, it's going to tear through this place in a blizzard of rogue magnetics and lightning. Anyone still here is going to die."
Athava was loath to leave Zarukin, but to stay would be to risk the lives of the conservators' staff, of architects, and all they had unearthed thus far.
"You are correct," he said. "Prepare for departure."
"What of your master? Is he still out there?"
Athava hesitated before answering.
"He is. Get your people back to their ships."
Ashkali hesitated before nodding and speaking into her rebreather's integral vox to issue the recall order. Athava turned and walked back to the Stormbird and did the same, though he sent the order to his warriors via telepathic pulse. Within 45 seconds, legionaries in crimson warplate emerged from various areas of the ruins. Each was trailed by a bulk servitor, hauling the fruits of their excavations. They boarded the Stormbird without a word, securing their findings in the hold before strapping themselves into the contoured benches along the gunship's inner hull. Ashkali's people took longer to return, hurrying back to their waiting transports with barely disguised panic. The storm was getting worse, the sky flickering with radioactive sunspots and boiling atmospheric superstorms. In the face of the worsening conditions, the conservator directed the excavation with clipped efficiency, ensuring everything they had discovered was inventoried on her bronzed data slate. Phocis Takar was the last aboard, and the lieutenant paused as he reached Athava. Dust caked the grooves of his armour, and his aura was bellicose, his mind that of a scholar who attacks a work with brute force reasoning. His methodology wasn't pretty, but it got results.
"Where is he?"
he asked.
"He is not here," replied Athava, watching the storm descend on the far reaches of Zarukin.
"That's not what I asked."
"I know."
"He should be here."
"Yes, indeed he should."
"Then where is he?"
Athava did not answer, lifting his gaze to the mountains as the storm struck the earth beyond the edge of the city. Raging plumes of lightning-shot dust and debris were hurled hundreds of meters into the air, arcing over the city. A mushroom cloud of fire erupted from its shattered outskirts. Another swiftly followed, rubble lifted high by twisting currents of air and torsioning magnetics. A harsh, metallic-tasting wind blew hard from the mountains, making the mechanics of his warplate hum in protest.
"We should be in the air," said Phocis to Carr.
"He will be here. And if he is not, this storm will not trouble him."
"You can't know that. What do any of us really know about him? What he can do or what he can endure? We barely know him."
Athava did not answer. That Phocis Takar was right made him only more reluctant to admit to his ignorance. The storm bird vibrated with potential, the pilot keeping it on the ground with a light touch, ready to lift off in an instant.
"Give the order," said Phocis Takar.
"Not yet."
The tallest spires of Zarukin swayed and groaned, the reinforcement within the stone tearing as alternating fields of powerful magnetics twisted them. Stone and steel peeled from buildings and spun away into the storm as searing winds buffeted the gunship. Dust raged within the Stormbird's troop compartment, swirling in vortices of geomantic significance. The Voxbeed in his helmet chirruped. An incoming message from Mistress Ashkali.
"Master Athava, we must take off, right now."
He nodded and said,
"Go, get out of here. We will be right behind you."
"See that you are."
The two Cervantes-class transports lifted into the air on plumes of jetfire, swaying and lurching wildly, as if the storm winds actively sought to prevent their escape. The first craft took off in the lee of a shattered structure that sheltered it from the worst of the winds. The pilot feathered the engines, and Athava lost sight of it as rusted ochre clouds closed in. The second craft was not so lucky. It twisted as a magnetic squall pulled its starboard wing down and buckled the metal of its hull. Ultra-rapid polarity shifts swung it around like a leaf in a hurricane. It flipped over onto its side, hurtling towards the ground and certain destruction. Athava slammed his mind into the second enumeration. Raw, kind energy flowed through him. He gripped the faltering transport with his power.
"Help me,"
he cried, the words blurted in a psychic shout. Phocis Takar was at his side an instant later, hands extended as he too unleashed his power. Athava's lieutenant was a practitioner of the kinetic arts, and his sigil of the Raptora cult glittered in the flickering lightning. Together they halted the transport's tumbling fall. Athava and Phocis Takar rolled their wrists in perfect concert, moulding the kind power to their will. The transport mimicked their movements, rotating like a designer's schematic being haptically manipulated. Its engines flared as the pilot fed every scrap of power to them.
"Release," said Athava.
He and Phocis Takar relinquished their hold on the transport. It shot skywards like a stone from a sling. Bone deep, repercussive pain surged through Athava's flesh, pain he would endure tenfold later. He let out a charged breath and stepped from the Stormbird's ramp. He read Phocis Takar's confusion.
"What are you doing?"
asked his lieutenant. "Get back on board!"
"Return to Kalena immediately," replied Athava through bloodied teeth. "Assist the 4th Legion elements in the evacuation. I will rejoin you when I can."
Phocis Takar shook his head and pressed his palm against the closing mechanism.
"I'm closing up, but we aren't leaving without you and the Primarch."
Athava saw the determination in Phocis Takar's aura and knew that any argument he might make against this course of action would be futile.
"Then I will attempt to be quick," he said.
Hurricanes of abrasive dust flensed the paint from his armour in silver streaks as he turned towards the city where his master awaited.
"If he is still alive."
Could any being survive conditions so inimical to life? The clouds parted, and a towering figure wreathed in multicoloured fire emerged from the storm in answer. He was a giant in crimson and gold, a warrior and scholar in one. His golden warplate had been crafted by the finest armourers of Terra, a masterpiece of curling horns, sculpted muscles, carved lions, and the finest scriptwork. A kilt of leather hung to his knees, and a hook-bladed sword crafted from Proserpine silk steel was belted at his waist, next to a colossal tome of psychic lore.
"My lord," said Arthava, using his psychic voice.
Magnus the Red was wrought from wrath and wonder, his face a protean blend of features that Arthava had never been able to entirely fix in his mind. A disconcerting attribute in a leader, one that would take some getting used to. Arthava wasn't sure he was there yet. The psychic fire of the Primarch's magnificent aura kept the storm's fury at bay. Magnus might have been strolling through Tizca's sculpture gardens, for all the tempest affected him. A trio of servitors followed him, each hauling a high-sided grav sled.
"Cutting it a bit close, are you not?" said Arthava.
The Primarch looked up, as if he hadn't noticed the storm at all.
"I had not completed my work," replied Magnus.
Zarukin fought to keep the Stormbird from escaping. Magnetic vortices shredded its belly, and spiteful winds hammered the fuselage with flying debris. The gunship's engines burned blue hot, and its superstructure shrieked as if it were being torn apart. Arthava felt the ground fall away with a sickening lurch. His head slammed against a stanchion as the storm sought to crush them. The pilot fought with all his skill, but against some foes there could be no victory. Blitzing winds howled into the Stormbird as a portion of the fuselage peeled away like foil. Sparks and explosions cascaded down the length of the gunship as rogue electromagnetic bursts fried circuitry and the control mechanisms worked into its structure.
"We're losing power to the engines."
Shredded metal ripped from the side of the gunship as its nose dropped back to the ground. Phocis Takar threw a kind shield over the breach, and the noise of the wind fell away. The Stormbird heeled over, spun on its central axis, and Arthava watched the splintering ruins of Zarukin racing up to meet them. Magnetic squalls ripped ancient buildings from their foundations and hurled them against one another like a child smashing toy bricks together. Then, an instant from impact, the gunship leveled out. The same kaleidoscopic fire that wreathed Magnus as he walked from the ruins burned beyond the breach. Arthava tore his gaze from the storm's inferno below to where Magnus stood at the prow of the gunship, one hand on his great book of lore. His aura blazed with a brilliant light, too radiant to look upon directly. It filled the interior of the gunship, a power of such magnitude that it made his own seem paltry. That their new leader was a master of the psychic arts had been obvious the moment Arthava had set eyes upon him. But this was exceptional.
"Take us home, pilot," said Magnus.
The Stormbird swiftly caught up to the lumbering Cervantes transports, and the pilot eased back on its thrust. Arthava sensed the gunship's unwillingness to slow, its hunter's name and hunter's heart reluctant to linger with such ungainly flyers. The fire beyond the breached fuselage faded as the gunship flew beyond the storm's reach, but Phocis Takar maintained the kind shield all the way to the planetary capital of Kalena. The gunship circled the city, awaiting clearance to enter its dangerously overcrowded airspace. While Magnus spoke to the pilot, Arthava studied the city below as a man might study an overcrowded ant farm. Kalena was a thriving trade hub, built at the termination of the Arrow Strait River Valley that had its origins beyond Zarukin. Here, the valley widened to form a vast bowl, enclosed by high cliffs on three sides and by a bottle-green ocean on the fourth. Kalena's buildings were older than any other Arthava had seen in his travels from Terra. Glorious, domed basilicas, rotating towers of phototropic glass, grand libraries and bustling commercial districts that welcomed vessels from off-world and ocean-going haulers from all across Morningstar. A convoluted web of transit routes, maglevs and curling arterials converged on Kalena from every direction, all monstrously overburdened by incoming traffic. Road cars were nose to tail, and thousands of the planet's inhabitants walked alongside the choked highways. Refugees, bearing all they owned in the hopes of securing swift passage off-world. The city itself was normally home to around 70,000 souls, but with the planetary evacuation in full flow, its population had reached 750,000 and was growing larger every day. The skies of Kalaena resembled an insect hive responding to an attack. Swarms of aircraft circled the outskirts of the city, 1,000 more rising on intricately plotted flight paths from Vashti Eshkol's control tower on the edge of its offshore starport. Every ship capable of transorbital flight had been pressed into service, ferrying Morningstar's population ships anchored in low orbit. Agri-barks now carried people instead of vats of protein gruel and gene crops, while the stalls of livestock haulers were packed with men and women being taken to life rather than the slaughterman's maul. Accidents were far from uncommon, with desperate pilots racing into the sky in defiance of Vashti's orders. Most times they were quickly redirected with electromagnetic tethers, or, in the case of one unsanctioned launch, shot down over the ocean by the starport's defense turrets to prevent a lethal cascade effect of collisions and crashes. At the center of the starport was the Lux Ferrum, a titanic mass conveyor from a bygone age of space exploration, when it was expected that these star-faring leviathans would land and become part of a newly colonized planet's infrastructure. Lost arts of technology had powered supremely powerful repulsor generators, worked into its 1,000-meter hull, allowing a vessel that ought not to have been able to survive atmospheric breach to land and return to the stars. Its vast bulk vented heat as provosts and legionaries directed frightened civilians onto its embarkation ramps, 60,000 already, and 50,000 more yet to board. Newly constructed towers on the cliffs that enclosed the city were minimizing the impact of rogue magnetics in the local area, but not even the technical genius of their construction could keep the area entirely stable. Each was a glaring eyesore, thought Othava. A boxy, riveted thing of bare girders and yellow and black hazard stripes. The architects of these towers had made planetfall barely a month after the arrival of the Thousand Suns, but they had already made an indelible mark on Morningstar. The entirety of the westernmost cliff had been sculpted into a basalt-black citadel known as the Shirai Maveth, its full height reshaped into an impregnable bulwark, the rock within blasted, cut, and burned into defensive galleries, wide parapets, firing steps, and macro-cannon emplacements. It was towards this grim stronghold that the Stormbird angled its prow, as its final approval to approach was granted. A narrow flight path, threading the absurdly overcrowded skies. To deviate from the prescribed manoeuvres even a fraction would almost certainly result in a mid-air collision. Othava craned his neck to study the Shirai Maveth as the gunship dropped down through the morass of aircraft. Its construction was mathematically precise, and yet was not without a proud, martial beauty. Its towers were finished with decorative finials, its gun ports worked with functionless embellishments, and its gates carved with frescoes that spoke of an artist's mind shackled by practicality.
"My brother does so like to make a statement," said Magnus, returning to the crew compartment.
Othava found the notion that his gene-sire had a single brother, let alone that he was now one of 12, hard to comprehend. That an individual so singular counted so many others like him seemed absurd, as though a pantheon of demigods had chosen to abandon their divine abode and play a part in the affairs of mortals. Othava had seen none of his father's brothers, but he had heard tell of their deeds. The legends of the Primarchs were already spreading throughout the crusading fleets, tales of impossible odds overcome and heroic achievements that Othava might have dismissed as garishly hyperbolic. But having seen his own Primarch in action, he knew better.
"He did all this in a single day?" asked Othava.
"He did," confirmed Magnus. "Of course, Given a free hand, we could achieve far greater in a fraction of the time.
We could.
Of course, said Magnus, giving him a curious look. The Stormbird twisted on its axis over one of the upper landing platforms, and Arthava heard the whine of its landing claws deploying. Surrounding turrets followed the gunship's motion, and Arthava frowned at the bellicose intent he sensed within every one of them. The Stormbird groaned as the pilot set it down, and the wounded superstructure eased. The pitch of the engines rose as the pilot cut power. Arthava let out a relieved breath. The Thousand Suns unharnessed and began disembarkation preparations as the frontal assault ramp lowered with a grating whine of protesting mechanisms. Walk with me, Arthava, said Magnus, and meet my brother of Olympus. Only later would Arthava be able to clearly recall his first meeting with Perturabo of the Iron Warriors. Rain began to fall as he stepped from the belly of the injured Stormbird, hard slashing rain that bounced from his armor and washed the dust of Zarukin from its plates. Glaring stab lights from a covering fire step swept the platform, catching every droplet, which seemed to be falling in slow motion. Four figures emerged from the fortress and advanced through the rain. Three were legionaries in burnished plates of hulking iron rendered slate grey in the shadows of their surroundings. They advanced shoulder to shoulder, and each bore a curved rectangular shield upon his left side, with a sheathed gladius held fast upon his right. Leading them was Perturabo of Olympus. Arthava's step faltered at the sight of the Lord of Iron. The Primarch was a giant whose likeness might have been carved from the same rock as the mountains. Jutting over his wide shoulder plates was the wire-wound grip of an enormous broadsword, worthy of the ancient war gods. Suddenly, tales of Perturabo felling entire armies with a single blow seemed not so far-fetched. Clad in titanic plates of Terminator armor, he towered over his warriors, his strength vast and depthless, like an approaching thunderhead. His power was brutally direct, yet it was without arrogance, leavened with open features that broke into a ready smile at the sight of Magnus.
"The meteorologicus feared you had been taken by the Magnus storm," said Perturabo, his words beaten upon the air like forge hammers on hot metal. "But I told them it would take more than a city-killing storm to bring down Magnus the Red."
"Had we waited a minute longer before abandoning Zarukin, they would have been right," said Magnus. "But what I learned in that final minute may make all the difference, brother." The Primarchs embraced, like armored beasts seeking to assert dominance over a rival. They came apart, and Arthava saw no rivalry, only shared brotherhood. Brother. That word again. The Primarchs were so different in aspect and power, so diametrically opposed, it seemed lunacy to imagine them springing from the same genetic root. But to look deeper was to see a shared passion for artistry and hidden knowledge, a love of beauty and the art of rendering wonders. Arthava's eyes roamed Perturabo's armor, taking in every curve and line, every flourish of a master craftsman, together with the many modifications that bore the hallmarks of one whose knowledge of machinery was unmatched. In a moment of revelation, Arthava understood that the Primarch himself had made these alterations. Perturabo spoke again, but Arthava was not listening. It took him a moment to realize that the words were not for Magnus, but for him.
My lord, he said.
My armor, Perturabo repeated. Is there something awry with its construction?
No, my lord, said Arthava, finding it suddenly hard to form the right words as the Primarch's stare bored into him like a drill.
I was just admiring its workmanship. The embellishments are quite unique. Tell me what you see, commanded Perturabo.
Athava's mouth was suddenly dry, and he took a moment to gather his thoughts before speaking.
I see the handiwork of Terawatt Armorus. Pre-Unity designs and Eastern skill, he said, trying not to let the Primarch's appraising gaze distract him. I see distant echoes of Nerodnian craft, but echoes nonetheless. The baroque turns on the plastron and gorget lead me to believe these plates were wrought in the Kolat Syakal forges.
You have a good eye, Athava, said Perturabo.
And Athava was humbled the Primarch knew his name.
What else?
He looked closer, now seeing the curling script winding around the edges of the Primarch's gauntlets, breastplate, greaves, and pauldrons. They were not, as he had first thought, discreet armorer's marks, but a single inscription moving from piece to piece.
You bear a nomenclature sequence, said Athava, similar to that of the Emperor's custodians, but I do not recognize the language.
It is Phoenician, said Perturabo, one of the earliest languages known to humankind. And this is a variant argot, carried from old Earth to become the first language of Olympia.
What does it say?
Nothing I wish to share, said Perturabo,
turning once again to Magnus, and Athava felt a curious mix of relief at a burden being removed from his shoulders, and regret that he could not bear it a little longer.
So, brother, did you find anything in those ruins worth the price you almost paid?
Time will tell, said Magnus, as Thousand Sun's legionaries began the process of unloading the Stormbird. Already, 15th Legion Tech Marines and Mechanicum Adepts were working to repair the damage wrought by the storm. Acetylene sparks and mag welders flickered at its belly. Magnus gestured to the gravsleds of recovered artifacts and said, We uncovered sealed archives and found much that predates the Great Crusade by centuries. Any one of them could be the key to revealing why this world alone of all the others in this system survived the cataclysm of Old Night unscathed.
Why is that knowledge so important to you?
It should be important to all of us, said Magnus.
We have more pressing concerns just now.
Magnus affected a look of mock superiority and said,
I seem to remember it was you who all but begged me to stay another hour in Boeotia to try and find the library of Cadmus before the Promethean infernos set the mountains ablaze.
Perturabo smiled at the shared memory.
We never did find it, did we?
No. And not a day goes by where I do not regret denying you that extra hour.
Have no regrets on that front, said Perturabo. Mount Kithiron was ablaze from foothills to summit 10 minutes after we left. Had we stayed, we would have died.
But we would have died enlightened, said Magnus. Perturabo gestured to the aircraft-filled sky.
We are not here to save knowledge, said Perturabo. We are here to save lives.
Both are vital to the future, said Magnus.
Aye, there is truth in that,
agreed Perturabo.
But I wonder which you value higher.